The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning. How are you?
Pretty good, thank you. Let's start by talking about the weather, because sometimes it's okay to talk about the weather, maybe even preferable. But what's weird about this time of the year for us is that, you know, we're going into winter and we're expecting there to be some rain. And in fact, there has been a little rain, but we've had this incredibly warm and dry weather. And we're very unaccustomed to such dryness in the air. Usually in the summer, it's hot and humid. Mm. The winter, we get the rain, so there's usually some moisture in there, but it's been incredibly dry. And everybody's talking about your lips are dry, your skin is dried out, static electricity everywhere in the air. The apparently pharmacies are going crazy, selling every kind of skin cream and lip balm you could imagine, really boosted the sales of all that kind of stuff. And everybody's talking about this real dryness in the air. We are advised that it's supposed to become a little more moist by the end of the week. But in the meantime, we're all walking around with chapped lips and dry
amazing.
Skin. It's
really very amazing. Unusual.
Very, very unusual. You know, I mean, I know that you guys do experience dryness in the winter. Times of year, but for us, it's very, very unusual. And of course, everybody's being shocked as they touch their cars and door handles and things amazing. Like that with this huge amount of static electricity in there.
Has there been any rain this winter so far?
A little. We've had some downpours, odd downpours here and there. But to say that we've had anything significant to speak of, I think would be overstating the situation. We're desperate for rain. November, December is not usually the rainiest time of the year. Normally most of the rain comes in January, February time. So there is still hope. But up until now, really not enough rain for our liking anyway.
Wow, it's a serious situation then, indeed, because obviously Israel receives rain in the winter. All right, the news continues to be dominated by combined issues of building a new government and the Netanyahu legal case. Has anything developed that could impact on this outcome?
Well, the first thing is that it's a little weird because, as I've said a few times already, we're now into the 3-week period of allowing where the mandate rests with the Speaker of the Knesset, and anybody, any member of Knesset is entitled to come forward and say, I've managed to construct a government, which essentially means that both Netanyahu and Benny Gantz have second chances to form a government if that's what they wish to do, either of them. And Netanyahu has claimed that negotiations and discussions are ongoing between the various parties to try and to give an indication that he is making some progress in this government building exercise. Benny Gantz has not been quite so optimistic, and he seems to deny the fact that there's anything of any substance to speak of in terms of negotiations and possibility of building a government. Avigdor Lieberman, the kingmaker, also has denied that there's any significant progress in constructing a government. And I think, you know, as each day goes by, we become more and more resigned to the fact that we probably are going to have a third election within one calendar year, in order to try somehow to get a government together. And I think the question is whether, you know, the legal issues that Netanyahu is facing might change anything as part of the third round of elections. You know, I've always been of the view that the third election is going to be the same as the second election, which was the same as the first election in terms of any significant result, and the people of Israel speaking about what it is that they would like to see in a new government, which is really split down the center. There is no firm view in one direction or the other about who should be the right person or the right party to form the next government. But what is interesting is that there's been a lot of discussion about Prime Minister Netanyahu's new situation in light of the announcement of those indictments that will be filed against him, which came on Thursday. And the new situation being, does he have the right to be Prime Minister? Does he have the right to hold ministerial portfolios? And in fact, does he even have the right to be called upon to form a government if his party is the largest party after the next round of elections? And there are different and conflicting opinions about all of these things. The one thing that everybody seems to be quite sure about, and when I say everybody, I'm talking about the legal eagles, those within the prosecution service, the attorney general's office, all of the people who have a view on what legally is allowed. They seem to be agreeing that he is actually entitled to continue to serve as Prime Minister, at least for now. And that was formally announced both by the Attorney General and by the State Prosecutor, who said there's nothing in the law that prevents him from serving as a Prime Minister. There are conflicting opinions about whether he's entitled to hold those four ministerial portfolios that he has at the moment. The Attorney General has come out saying he is entitled to hold those portfolios. The State Prosecutor disagrees with that view and says that he ought to give up those portfolios because the law demands that any minister who is subject to an indictment should resign. So there is a conflict of view. At the moment, nothing's happened. In other words, the Prime Minister continues to hold those portfolios, and he doesn't seem likely to give them up anytime soon. The question about whether the president could call upon him to form a government, to hand in the mandate to form the government in the event that his party is the largest one in the next round of elections, assuming we get there, is also subject for discussion, and there is no clear view on this. So it's going to be interesting to see how the president chooses to interpret that, if indeed he has this dilemma, which he might be faced with, about who he will call upon to form the next government. One thing seems also to be in conflict is within the Likud itself, about who should be the leader of the party. Both Gideon Saar and more recently now Nir Barkat have come out indicating that they would like to challenge for leadership of the party if there was an opportunity to do so, if new primaries elections were held for the leadership of the Likud. The latest poll that was conducted amongst members of the Likud ironically shows that Prime Minister Netanyahu would probably win a primary if there was one held today amongst those who are entitled to vote for leaders of the Likud, and that both Gideon Saar and Nir Barkat would be defeated in their attempts to take over the leadership. So that is very, incredible. Very instructive, yeah. And you know, surprised me a little bit, because I thought that the cracks were really starting to show within the Likud, and that people were starting to understand that the situation is untenable, and that a prime minister is subject to these legal proceedings really cannot continue to lead the party, lead the country, while also facing these legal issues. So those are really the main developments. Netanyahu, of course, has continued to try to focus on matters of state. He's indicated that there are developments within the security world concerning Syria, Iran, concerning other enemies of Israel, which he can't really talk about, but which he's having to deal with. Some things that are coming out of Gaza. So we're not really quite sure what all of that means. Tonight, there's going to be a demonstration in support of Netanyahu to be held in the central part of Tel Aviv. Many people are expected to turn up at this demonstration. It's going to be interesting to see how that pans out. Of course, it's being organized by the supporters within the Likud. A lot of people are expected to turn up to this demonstration in support of Netanyahu, in spite of these legal issues that he's facing.
Yeah, it's really it's quite surprising. I would have thought by now the Likud would have asked for a change in leadership. I was absolutely convinced that would happen.
Well, there are people who are unsurprised by this, because there is a view which says that really the Likud and those people who are the main movers and shakers within the Likud are really just Netanyahu people. He has made sure that the main leadership level and those people who are have been elected to the Knesset list for the Likud are really just people who will support Netanyahu at every opportunity and will not in any way challenge him for the leadership of the party. And I suppose in some respects, we're kind of seeing how that's coming, you know, bearing fruit for him right now. But, you know, I think that every day that passes could potentially bring a slightly new view and some changes. So we'll have to just take it day by day to see what develops, you know, in each day. The demonstration tonight, I think, will be quite influential in informing people's thoughts. Let's see what tomorrow brings.
Yeah, very, very interesting indeed. The Israel will host the largest event focused on anti-Semitism. That's going to take place in January. What's planned for this event? And, of course, this also follows a huge development in the United Kingdom. I told our listeners about that earlier, where the British chief rabbi wrote an article in the Times very, very strongly condemning Labour and Jeremy Corbyn.
Yeah, so Rabbi Ephraim Mervis, of course, formerly South African, chief rabbi of the UK, has spoken about this poison that's taken root in the Labour Party. And I've seen some quite interesting documentaries about what's exactly been going on within the British Labour Party. It is very unsympathetic, I have to tell you. It was quite surprising, as someone who's actually knows some of the politics within the UK fairly closely, having lived there for a number of years. And so, you know, I have been following things. The anti-Semitism in the UK is pretty clear, and not only in the UK, but indeed around the world, because we've also seen leaders within Europe saying to British Jews within Europe in general that they need to keep a relatively low profile. And that's quite surprising, because I would have thought that, you know, in this day and age where we have the State of Israel, who can really support the rights of Jews around the world and act against anti-Semitism, we've certainly seen a new kind of Jew grow up in the years since the State of Israel has been in existence. Those Jews who are prepared to and willing to make themselves known, put their heads above the parapet and be proud to be Jews rather than to have to keep a low profile. And yet in Europe these days, unfortunately, that is not the case. So this event in January is really, really important. It's an event that coincides with the World Holocaust Day and is part of the World Holocaust Forum that's been established. And this will be the fifth World Holocaust Forum event, but the first one that's actually taking place in the State of Israel. The previous events, year after year, have been held in European locations and with good cause going around and being held in those places where they've got a very, very questionable and a negative record for anti-Semitism, things that have happened to Jews. But this one in January, which is planned for January, is to, as I said, coincide with World Holocaust Day and will also coincide with the 75th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz. And that's, of course, important because, in fact, this World Holocaust Day is exactly on the day of the liberation of the Auschwitz-Birkenau death camp. And this will be the 75th anniversary. Apparently, 40 world leaders will be coming to Israel, including three monarchs and presidents of countries, including Russian President Vladimir Putin, but also many, many other world leaders will have been invited and have already indicated their intention to come along to this event that will be focused at Yad Vashem. And even though it coincides with the commemoration of the Holocaust and is, of course, a World Holocaust Forum event, they have decided to focus this year's or next year's event on anti-Semitism. And I think it's a very appropriate focus for an event like this to be held in Israel and to talk about not only this anti-Semitism that gave rise to the Holocaust all those years ago, but indeed what's happening in our modern day about how anti-Semitism seems to be increasingly acceptable all way around the world, and in a very, very worrying, a very concerning sort of way. So it's going to be interesting to watch this event. We're expecting thousands of people to come along, aside from the leaders of those countries. For example, the events that have been held in other parts of the world, in Krakow, in Poland, and in Kyiv in the Ukraine. And there was another event, a third event that was held actually in Krakow, so twice in Krakow. And then there was an event that was held in Prague and not too far from Theresienstadt, where, of course, that camp was set up during the period of the Holocaust. It's going to be interesting to see what goes on. But I, for one, am very happy about this focus on anti-Semitism. And let's hope that some positive conclusions can be drawn from this event, which will obviously have a lot of focus with all the world leaders planning to attend.
Absolutely. Unfortunate that we have to have it, but very good that it is taking place. It's about to go 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you, as always, for a very interesting and up-to-date Israel report. The morning's Israel report was brought to you by the Blue Agency, your trusted property professionals in Israel. The Blue Agency manages over 350 million shekels worth of residential investment properties throughout Israel. For owners who live locally and overseas, their dedicated property management team will provide you with a level of service that can't be beaten. Barry Cohen is in South Africa, so you can send me a message on 34519 or a telegram on 061-895-1019, and they will contact you to make a personal appointment to discuss how to make long-distance ownership simple and rewarding. Before we go to news, does tennis service begin in the left or the right court? Taking a look at some of your answers, David Zimmerman says right, Yossi says right, Colin says right court, known as the deuce court, Michael C says the left court. The answer is indeed the right court. Well done to everybody who got it right, and well done to Zanatti for not reminding me about the sports question.